Want to welcome everyone this morning. We're glad to see you. We have a good crowd here this day, and we're thankful to see Kedrick back with us today. I know he's still having some problems, but I think it's encouraging to see him, and certainly encouraged from the news we've had thus far on Marley. This morning, I want to preach a lesson on Let's Get Going. And the text for the lesson is in Nehemiah. So if you'll turn there, we'll study a few chapters of Nehemiah, and then after that, we're going to talk about some things to help us get focused, where that'll help us get going. And by no means is the lesson that I had an exhaustive study of the things that help us stay focused and do well, but it's just a small snippet of what's in the scriptures, of things that we can talk about. Robbie told me a while ago that my microphone had 18 hours on it. I don't plan to use all of those, so we're going to try to hit it and get along on the lesson. So let's turn to Nehemiah 1. Nehemiah 1, verses 2 and 3. You have a situation here where they were in captivity. Nehemiah was in captivity, and he was a cupbearer for Artaxerxes, the king. And it starts off in verse 2 and 3, and Hananiah, one of my brethren, came from the men from Judah, and I asked him concerning the Jews who had escaped, who had survived the captivity, and concerning Jerusalem. And they said to me, the survivors who are left from the captivity in the province are in great distress and reproach. The wall of Jerusalem is also broken down, and its gates are burned with fire. So Nehemiah, as he had saw some of his brethren that he came back from Jerusalem, asked him about the condition of the city, and things were in dire distress. And the walls had been broken down. And so Nehemiah saw a problem, but now you got to keep in mind, Nehemiah is a slave. He's the cupbearer for the king, so he cannot just up and leave because he has a job to do in Shushan the palace. And he says his initial reaction, so it was in verse 4, when I heard these words that I sat down and wept and mourned for many days, was fasting and praying before the God of heaven. And I can only imagine what the things that he was praying about as far as what to do and how to do and what to go. But it's the bottom line is he was very sad whenever he heard about his homeland and the bad shape that it was in. And he really was in a position where he didn't know what to do, I suppose. He was trying to figure out what to do. Like I said, he couldn't just up and leave. So one thing that he did, starting in verse 5, he said, and I said, I pray, Lord God of heaven, O great and awesome God, you who keep your covenant and mercy with those who love you and observe your commandments. And then if you drop on down to verse 7, and he's talking about in his prayer, we have acted very corruptly against you. He acknowledged his sin and have not kept the commandments and statutes nor the ordinances which you have commanded your servant Moses. So in his prayer, he's praying to him about the distress they're in. He's acknowledging them why, you know, he understands why that they are in captivity and the things that they had done wrong, that they had sinned. And in verse 11, he says, O Lord, I pray, please let your ear be attentive to my prayer, to the prayer of your servant and the prayer of your servants who desire to fear your name. Let your servant prosper this day. And I pray and grant him mercy in the sight of this man, for I was the king's cupbearer. So I think you can already see that he was already looking toward the point in which he was trying to get some sort of consideration from the king to be able to do something. But again, he's very sad. He's wept for several days, and it showed on his face. And he asked that whatever he did, that it would prosper. He asked that. So in this prayer, he's talked about the problems ahead, he's talked about his sin, and then he's talked about the whatever action he took, that it would prosper. But during this time, he continued to work as the king's cupbearer. In chapter 2, verses 1 and 2, it said, "It came to pass in the month of Nisan, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, when the wine was before him, that I took the wine and gave it to the king. Now I had never been sad in his presence before." So I think it, one thing that you kind of get the sense of here, it was not a good thing to look like you were sad or unhappy in front of the king. He says, "Therefore the king said to me," in verse 2, "Why is your face sad, since you are not sick? This is nothing but sorrow of heart, so I became dreadfully afraid." So I think you could see from that even, there was a sense here in which him looking like he was sad would be very fearful, because the king would not like that. But he became, you know, afraid at the thought, because the king has just pretty well put it on him. "Why are you sad? You know, you're not sick. So what's wrong with you?" So in verse 3, you can see as he begins to gather up in his mind to get ready to make his approach, he talks to the king, and he said to the king, "May the king live forever. Why should my face not be sad? When the city, the place of my father's tombs, lies in waste and its gates are burned with fire." Well, the king said, you know, he wants to know, what do you want? He said, then the king said to me, "What do you request?" And then notice that he's got this all through Nehemiah. He said, "So I prayed to God of heaven." And you know, it had to be like a little silent prayer as the king asked him what he wants. And he's beginning to get ready to put his petition out there. And he says that prayer to God. And he said, "I said to the king, if it pleases the king, and if your servant has found favor in your sight, I ask that you send me to Judah, to the city of my father's tombs, that I may rebuild it." And then the king wanted to know how long it was going to take him in verse 6. And when would he return? And they set a time. So we see in this, Nehemiah, as he is, first of all, he's noticed there's a problem, and then he prays about it, and then he starts to take action to what he needs to do. He is beginning to make a move. We look in Nehemiah 2 and verse 9. Of course, he gets permission. He wants permission so that he can pass through the land, because, again, he's a slave, so he can't just be passing through the area without some letters that says he can pass. "So I went to the governors in the region beyond the river and gave them the king's letters." And these are the letters to let them know that it's okay for him to go to Jerusalem. "Now the king had sent captains of the army and horsemen with me," which had to be very impressive to see that a Jewish captive here had a small contingent of soldiers with him as he went to going towards Jerusalem. And it says in verse 10 then, you can see here the local politicians, the local guys were a little upset. "When Sanballat and the Hornite and Tobiah the Ammonite official heard of it, they were deeply disturbed that a man who come to seek the well-being of the children of Israel." So you can see here what the mission is. They realized what the mission was. It's to come in to build this wall, but it was seek the well-being of the children of Israel. Nobody was doing that at the time. They were captives. They were slaves. So it was very upsetting to them. So they would have seen these letters. He got to pass through into the land. But I want you to take note here how he operated. He said he examined the needs on the wall in secret. In Nehemiah 2 and verse 12, he says, "I arose at night, and a few men with me. I told no one what God had put in my heart to do." So here he is. He lays out at night, and he's going to take a look at the situation. Now, when we go look at a job, sometime or another, we don't necessarily do it in secret, but we try to get out and look at where we're going, what we're going to be doing. But he did this in secret. He didn't want anybody yet to know. He says, "And there was not any animal with me except the one which I rode. And I went out by night through the valley gate to the serpent well and to the refuse gate viewed the walls of Jerusalem, which were broken down, and its gates, which were burned with fire. Then I went to the fountain's gate, the king's pool. There was no room for the animal under the pass. So he couldn't even hardly get around. This thing is in bad shape. So I went up in the night by the valley and viewed the wall. Then I turned back and entered to the valley gate and so returned. And the officials did not know where I had gone or what I had done. And I had not yet told the Jews, the priests, the nobles, the officials, and the others who did the work. So at this point, he's got this idea here of rebuilding the walls, but he's not put that out yet. So he gets there. He's got the letters to get him to the city. He hands them to Sanballat. He goes around, and he looks at everything just to see where he's at on this situation. Then he comes back then after that, and he makes the case because he hadn't even told his own people yet. It's verse 17, "Then I said to them, 'You see the distress that we are in, how Jerusalem lies waste, and its gates are burned with fire. Come, let us build the wall of Jerusalem, that we may no longer be a reproach.'" So he has approached the Jews and the nobles, the Jewish leaders and all those in that area, and he's letting them know about his plan. He would like to build a wall. And another thing he says, in verse 18, he said, "And I told them of the hand of my God, which had been good unto me, and also the king's words that he had spoken to me." And then he says, "So they said," he convinced them, "let us rise and build." Then they set their hands to this good work. Well, the one thing that I noticed in thinking about this lesson as far as how it would be pertain to Oakland, you know, it's one thing to see a problem like he did, and it's quite another to figure out how to handle that problem. And you can know how to handle a problem. I mean, I look at problems every day in my work. But I mean, I can see them and I see a problem. But if I don't do anything, that doesn't get the problem solved. But then he lets the proper ones that need to know, he examines the situation. He lets the ones that need to know what needs to go on here. And then he talks to them and he convinces them of this project, of need to go and build. So he has worked this thing, and he's got to convince them to go. And then they decide, they said, "Well, let's build the wall." And then more importantly, in that last part of verse 18, they set their hand to do the work. And that's the key point right there. They have decided, okay, we're going to do this. But now you've got detractors. Just about in any time that you do anything with anybody, whether it's business or the church or anywhere else, there's always going to be detractors. Now, they can be within or they can be without. In this case, they were without. In verse 19, he said, "Then Sanballat the Hornite and Tobiah the Ammonite official and Geshem the Arab heard of it. They laughed at us and despised us and said, 'What is this thing that you are doing? Will you rebel against us, against the king?'" So you see in this passage here, you've got detractors. You're always going to have detractors. There's always going to be somebody against you. But now they've set their hand to do the work. And this, will you quit now because you've got a detractor, or will you keep going? It says in verse 20 that Nehemiah answered them and said, "God of heaven himself will prosper us. Therefore we his servants will rise and build, but you have no inheritance or right or memorial in Jerusalem." Well, Jerusalem was a city for the Jews and Jews only. And Nehemiah let these officials know that, look, we're going to do this. God is with us, and we're going to do this. And you don't have any right to the city, and you don't have any reason to be a part of this. So Nehemiah dealt with those detractors at that point. And I think we're going to see later on as we go along here that just because you handle a detractor one time doesn't mean that they go away. Detractors will follow you. And they, like I said, they're always there. Chapter 3 talks about different ones as they started to do the work. Let's skip over to chapter 4. And Sanballat in 4, 1 and 2. "And it so happened that when Sanballat heard that we were rebuilding the wall, that he was furious and very indignant, and mocked the Jews. And he spoke before his brethren, the army of the Samaria, and said, "What are these feeble Jews doing? Will they fortify themselves? Will they offer sacrifices? Will they complete it in a day? Will they revive the stones from the heaps of rubbish, stones that are burned?" So what do you say that he's doing right there? He's just making fun of them. He's making fun of them. He's trying to destroy the work, trying to slow down the work, anything that he can do. It says then in 4, verses 4 through 6, again, the thing that Nehemiah did each time he would go back to prayer. "Hear, O God, for we are despised. Turn their reproach on their own heads and give them as plunder to a land of captivity. Do not cover their iniquity and do not let the sin be blotted out before you, that they have provoked you to anger before the builders." So we built the wall, and the entire wall was joined together up to half its height, for the men, for the people had a mind to work. So you got these detractors here. Nehemiah prayed to God as he dealt with them, and the work continued. They done got the wall built halfway up. Well, Sanballat's not through yet. Nehemiah 4, 7 and 8. "And it happened when Sanballat, Tobiah, and the Arabs, and Ammonites, and Ashdodites heard that the walls of Jerusalem were being restored and the gaps were beginning to be closed, that they became very angry. And then they conspired together to come and attack Jerusalem and create confusion." So what they're going to do, they're not done. This is several times they've tried this. They're going to try to slow down the work. They're going to try to attack them. And, of course, verse 9, "Nevertheless, we made our prayer to our God." Nehemiah, once again, first initial thing, he prayed to God, and then he took action. It wasn't prayer only, but it was prayer and action together, in which they set up basically guards. It says then in verse 15 of chapter 4, "And it happened when our enemies heard that it was known to us." In other words, they knew about the plot, that God had brought their plot to nothing. "And all of us returned to the wall, everyone to his work." So the plot went down. There was nothing stopping them. It says they continued the work. Each time you've got a detractor here, each attempt, they just kept right on building that wall. But then in chapter 5, verses 1 through 5, we have some internal problems. And the internal problems really had the potential to wreck this whole situation. "And there was a great outcry of the people and their wives against their Jewish brethren, for there were those who said, 'We are sons and our daughters are many, therefore let us get grain that we may eat and live.'" And what you have a situation here where they didn't have enough food, they were very poor, and I think there had been basically a famine in the land. So they've got a situation here where they couldn't hardly eat, and they had mortgaged. "We have mortgaged our lands and our vineyards and houses that we may buy grain because of famine. There were also those who said, 'We have borrowed money for the king's tax on our lands and vineyards, yet now our flesh is as the flesh of our brethren, our children as our children, and indeed we are forcing our sons and our daughters, and some of our daughters have been brought into slavery. It is not in our power to redeem them, for the men have our lands and our vineyards." One of the things that you have here is they were very poor here, and right in the middle of this project, building this wall, they got an internal problem. And Jews were charging other Jews interest. And if you go back and look in Leviticus 25, 35 through 39, we're not going to go back and look at that passage, it was strictly against the law for a Jew to charge another Jew interest. You just could not do that. It was also, you were not supposed to take them as slaves and think that. And that seems to be what is going on here. And this problem here had the potential to wreck this wall. But let's look in verse 10 through 12 of chapter 5. Let's first look at 7 through 9. This is Nehemiah talking. After serious thought, I rebuked the nobles and rulers, and this would be Jewish ones, and said to them, each of you is extracting usury, which is interest, from his brother. So I called a great assembly against them, and I said to them, according to our ability, we have redeemed our Jewish brethren who were sold to the nations. Now indeed, will you even sell your brethren? Or should they be sold to us? Then they were silenced and found nothing to say. They had got in financial trouble with other Gentiles, which they could borrow money from them, but you weren't supposed to pay interest from one Jew to another. And he is condemning them for it, even to the part of them becoming slaves. They didn't have anything to say. In verse 10 through 12, and I also with my brethren and my servants am lending them money and grain. This is Nehemiah talking. Please let us stop this usury. Restore now them, even this day, their lands, their vineyards, their olive groves, their houses, and a hundredth of the money and the grain, new wine and oil, which you have charged them. And they said, we will restore it and require nothing from them. We will do as you say. So Nehemiah talked to the people that were charging the interest here. The one thing that was causing the strife among the Jewish brethren here, the one thing that could just really bring this wall to a stop, and he got that corrected. Stop that charging interest from one Jew to another. And it says in chapter 6, verse 1, and then also in verse 13, we'll start with 1. Now it happened when Sanballat, Tobiah, and Geshem the Arab, and the rest of our enemies heard that we had rebuilt the wall, that there were no breaks left in it, though at the time I had not hung the door and the gates. And then drop off to verse 15. So the wall was finished on the 25th day of Elul in 52 days. So what you have here, they had several things going on. How did Nehemiah and the Jews do it? Because they had problems external. You know, Sanballat and Tobiah and all of those. And they had problems internal. Let's look at what they did. How did they get this wall built? In 52 days. And I went back and looked at that. I think that would be June 7th or 8th. So, you know, that's been since the 4th of July for us. They built this thing in 52 days, a wall around the city. That's a pretty good size place. But what did they do? We had somebody identified to work. They started. They stayed focused and worked. When the external problems came, they dealt with them. When the internal problems came, they dealt with them. They stayed focused, and they finished the work. So now the last part of the lesson we want to talk about. I want to talk about some things to help us stay focused. And what we're going to do is apply that lesson to us today. We're trying to build a wall, if you will. We're trying to be a strong congregation. And let's look at some things that help us improve here as a congregation. This is by no means a complete list. But let's start with Romans 16 and verse 16. Some things to help us stay focused. Greet one another with a holy kiss. The churches of Christ greet you. Well, there's probably a lot of debate as what the holy kiss is. I personally think it's a greeting where it's a kiss. It's not erotic or anything like that, but a kiss on the cheek or whatever, that where they are acknowledging or doing a greeting here. I think a lot of ways what we do be a handshake or speak to each other or something like that. But one thing to help us stay focused is actually speaking to one another, talking to one another. You know, I don't know exactly what a holy kiss is, but I know you can't do it with your head turned, that's for sure. You have to be able to look people in the eye and talk to them. You got to consider others more than self. In Philippians 2, Let's turn to Philippians 2, 2 through 5. Fulfill my joy by being like-minded, having the same love, being of one accord in one mind. Let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind, let it esteem others better than himself. Let each of you look out not only for his own interest, but also the interest of others. In this passage, I think you see that you're talking about being of the same mind, the same love, being of one accord. All of this thing showing that we are working together. And we're not only looking at our interest, but we actually look at the other person and see what do they have needs of. We're trying to put ourselves, and what we used to sometimes call that, we walk in their shoes. And we try to see what they have need of. But we have to work together. We consider others more than self. We look at devoted to love one another, Romans 12, 10. Be kindly affectionate to one another with brotherly love and honor, giving preference to one another. And see, in this love that we have one another, we give preference to one another. In other words, we're not looking at what I need, we're looking at what you need. We're giving you what you need. I'm looking to see what you need. And that's what it's talking about there. John 13. John 13, verse 34. A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another as I have loved you, that you also love one another. And we know Christ who died on the cross for us, how much he loved us. We're building up one another in Romans 14. And this is a good thought. This is certainly something that I need and I receive from you, brethren, from some of you. Therefore, let us pursue the things that make for peace and the things which one may edify one another. Now, look at that passage closely. Let us pursue things that make for peace. So we got to, when you pursue something, I really go after it. And the things that we may edify one another. In other words, I am trying to build you up, and I've got to look for ways that I can build you up. And that's what we're that should be our goal. That's just what we do as Christians. We're to care for one another. 1 Corinthians 12, 25. That there should be no schism in the body, that the members should have the same care for one another. So if you look at that passage closely, there's not supposed to be a little group or a clique or anything like that, but we should have the same care for one another, each member. And that's something that takes a lot of work, because it's easier to, if you want to kind of identify with someone that you enjoy being around. But we have to have a more inclusive love. We need to love one another, love everyone across the board in the whole congregation. Be kind to one another. In Colossians 3. through 13. Therefore, as the elect of God and holy and beloved, put on tender mercies, kindness, humility, meekness, and long-suffering, bearing with one another and forgiving one another, if anyone has a complaint against another, even as Christ forgave you, so also do you. And I look at that. I looked at that, and I stood there trying to think about, well, what did Christ do? I'm supposed to forgive someone as Christ forgave them. And I looked, and this is a passage I did not put on there, but in Matthew 27, 44. Take a look at this with me. There's two passages I want you to look at. Jesus is hanging on the cross, if you can get that picture in your mind. In verse 44, it says, and even the robbers who were crucified with him reviled him with the same thing. So, if I understand that right, both robbers is reviling him on the cross. And now look at Luke 23. Verses 39. Beginning. Luke 23:39. Then one of the criminals who was hanged blasphemed him, saying, "If you are Christ, save yourself and us." And the other answering rebuked him, saying, Do you not even fear God, seeing you are in the same condemnation? And we indeed justly, for we receive the due reward of our deeds, but this man has done nothing wrong. Then he said to Jesus, "Lord, remember me when you come in your kingdom." And Jesus said to him, and I want you to think about this, how hard that'd be. And Matthew is talking about earlier in the day here, they were both reviling him. And now this man is asking for his help. "Remember me when you come in your kingdom," verse 42. And then he says, and Jesus said to him, "Assuredly I say unto you, you will be with me in paradise." Well, what you're seeing here, that's being kind to one another. That is something that it's hard for me to wrap my head around. How that someone can revile you, and just hours later, you have obviously forgiven him and you have invited him to be in the kingdom with you. But now that's what it's saying. Go back and look at Colossians 3, 12 through 13, or verse 13, "Bearing one another, forgiving one another, if anyone has a complaint against another, even as Christ forgave you, so you almost must do." If Christ can do that, surely we can do the other. 1 Peter 3. "Finally, all of you be of one mind, having compassion for one another. Love as brothers. Be tenderhearted, be courteous, not returning evil for evil or reviling for reviling, but on the contrary, blessing, knowing that you were called to this, that you may inherit a blessing." So I looked at that passage again. I'm not supposed to be reviling. In other words, somebody reviles me, I don't need to revile back. Somebody gives me evil, I don't need to give it back. But I need to do blessing, knowing that you were called to this. This is a mission for us. We that wear the name of Christian, being able to bless others who have done us wrong, that you may inherit a blessing. 1 Thessalonians 5, encourage one another. 4 comfort each other and edify one another, just as you are doing. Edify one another, building each other up. And I tell you what, that's a challenge. It's a challenge to be able to look at someone, and to be able to do that, I kind of got to know what you're doing. And this is something that I need to work on. I try my best to try to build people up. I try to do it during the week and try to do it else time too, but it's something I can work on more. They were doing it, but he says you need to keep doing that. You need to keep working at it. You need to, and you have to kind of know what's going on in their life to be able to encourage them. And then pray for one another. I want you to look at Ephesians 6, verse 18. I've got James 5:16, another good passage, but let's look at Ephesians 6, 18. "Praying always with all prayer and supplication in the Spirit, being watchful to this end with all perseverance and supplication for all the saints." And I got to think about it. You know, the supplication is a petition, if you will. You mean I'm supposed to be petitioning something good for you? "Praying always with prayer and supplication in the Spirit, being watchful to this end with all perseverance and supplication for all the saints." I'm supposed to be looking for things for you, praying to God for things for you. But that seems to be the indication it had. Now let's look at James 5:16. Confess your trespasses to one another and pray for one another that you may be healed. The effectual, fervent prayer of a righteous man avails much. And you know, I just think about that passage too. That is a wonderful passage. That you have congregation that you're close to, that you can be able to talk to them and they can pray on your behalf. What a wonderful concept. What a wonderful concept. Now what I've talked about here, this is just a few things needed to help stay focused. Because that's ultimately the goal here. We want to stay focused on what we're doing, on what we need to do in order to help our brethren, to help ourselves, in order for us to wear the name of Christian properly. Because that's what we're wearing. We're named the name of Christian. I'm thinking about Christ hanging on that cross. How did that guy revile him, and how did he forgive him? I don't know. I mean, that is tough. How can you forgive someone that is giving it to you in a bad way? So my question to you is this. Are you focused on building as Nehemiah was? Are you focused on greeting? Are you focused on loving one another? Are you focused on forgiving one another? Are you focused on building up your brethren? Are you praying for your brothers? If not, we got to make correction. We got to work on this. Let's get going. We have tremendous opportunity. I was thinking about a young lady that works for me. She mentioned one day, she said, I am just so impressed. And she calls them the Church of Christ, you know. The Church of Christ. And she'd noticed here, I am so impressed y'all have so many people that continued to worship. She's talking about how many cars was out in the parking lot back during the pandemic, you know, when nobody was meeting. She said, y'all just keep right on going. And she was impressed. And see, that would be something to be impressed about. We got people looking at us because we're a light. We're a light in our community. We're a beacon because we are Christians. And right now, if you've turned on the news any in the last week or so, it doesn't matter what station you turn on, our country is in disarray. People watch that and they're in disarray. We got all this stuff going in Afghanistan. We got this stuff going with the new strain of the pandemic. We got the hurricanes rolling in. The whole world seems like it's in disarray. But even when the whole world is in disarray, we have to stay focused. We have to stay focused on what we are. We are Christians. We're of the light. We're supposed to be showing each other the way and showing to the people that are in the world the way. Let's get going. Let's build our faith. I want to extend the invitation. If you've done wrong and you need to confess publicly, now is the time to do it. The saints will pray for you on your behalf. Or if you've not been baptized into Christ and you need to name the name of Christ to be a part of this body, to be a part of this shining light, we invite you to come as we stand and sing.